To be blunt, engagements are sold by society as all sex and champagne, which they are in part. So in an ideal world, they are lots of sex and lots of champagne. And I hope I'm not turning off the parents listening. But under the surface of all of that, there is this entire identity shift happening that's virtually never acknowledged in society and therefore on an individual level.
Hello, everyone. I'm Denise Gorin. Welcome to Bite Your Tongue, the podcast. Thanks for joining us as we speak with experts, authors, parents, and even young adults to explore the transition from parenting our young children to building healthy relationships with our now adults. And of course, when to bite our tongues. We're so happy you're with us. So let's get started. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Bite Your Tongue, the podcast. It's June, and we thought this is the best month to talk about weddings again. Today, we're taking our two wedding episodes, and we've selected the best advice and the best ideas that listeners thought were most helpful. We've combined these two interviews into one really great episode. So we're going to begin with an episode that ran very early in season one. We called it, Whose Wedding Is It Anyway? We interviewed a therapist from the very popular I'll Talk Wedding Therapy Center in New York City. Let's listen to what she had to say. Whose wedding is it anyway? I'm Denise Gorin, and I'm joined by my good friend and co-host, Dr. Ellen Broughton. Ellen, we are going to talk about weddings. Just the thought of weddings conjures up anxiety for me. I remember when I got engaged, you know, way back in 1984, we got engaged in April and we were married in September of the same year. I think that's pretty undoable these days. You have your own ideas, Ellen. I mean, tell me what you're thinking about this whole topic and conversation.
Well, since I have a daughter who's getting married in a year, I have lots to think about with this conversation, and I know very, very little. I also can say that what little I do know comes from Say Yes to the Dress or that other wedding show, Four Weddings, where they have to win the wedding and all of them look like terrible ideas. So today we are beyond excited, especially I am beyond excited to welcome Allie Houston Lyons. She is a therapist at I'll Talk, a boutique therapy practice that specializes in helping the modern day bride or groom cope with the stresses of planning a wedding. We're really excited to have you.
Yes. Hello. I so appreciate you guys having me. I am more than thrilled to be here and to dig into all of the topics wedding wise with you two.
But let's start at the top. Engagement. You get the call. Mm-hmm. Let's hope you get the call. Your child's engaged. Hopefully you're excited. And then I think, well, what's the next step for the parent? How do you as a family transition from the dating phase to now the engagement stage? What sort of changes and what roles do the parents of the adult kids play?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that your first step as a family is to give the engagement space to breathe and to encourage that in your child. So a lot of times people get engaged and they want to rush straight into wedding planning, which really means rushing straight into stress. And also quickly replaces the idea and the importance of the marriage itself with the idea of the wedding. So I think that's my first big point to bring into the podcast today. Preparing for a wedding often unintentionally overtakes any instinct to prepare for the actual marriage, which, as you can imagine, isn't exactly a great start for lifetime partnership. So the first thing that I really encourage parents to do is celebrate big time, but also to help their kids focus their attention on this beautiful and also massive decision that they've just made.
What are the undersurface things that come to the surface when the couple gets engaged that maybe as a parent we should be more sensitive to?
To be blunt, engagements are sold by society as all sex and champagne, which they are in part. So in an ideal world, they are lots of sex and lots of champagne. And I hope I'm not turning off the parents listening. But under the surface of all of that, there is this entire identity shift happening that's virtually never acknowledged in society and therefore on an individual level. So with an engagement, we're talking about big, bold lifetime change here. And engaged couples are expected to feel blissful, literally blissful all the time. That's the picture they're given. And it's not realistic. They may be feeling grief associated with the loss of singlehood. They may be fearful of a commitment that's intended to last decades. They may feel disappointed that the experiences that they're having don't match what they expected. And I think that word expected is so critical because that's a huge part of wedding planning is expectations. Mm-hmm. So engagements and especially weddings are this pressure cooker for expectations. Pressure from family, pressure from friends, from traditional media, and now definitely social media is a huge one. From society, from culture at large, we're told in many different ways exactly what this is supposed to look like. So we're told the engagement should be the happiest time of your life. And if it doesn't look like that, maybe you're in the wrong relationship. We're told that the wedding should be the absolute best day of your life. And if it's not, it's a failure. That your bachelor party should look like the movie The Hangover. That your bridal shower should look like an Instagram influencer social media page. That your wedding should be a fairy tale. I could probably go on for a long time. Engaged couples carry these expectations with them like they're carrying a boulder. And that pressure brings out a whole host of emotions.
And how do us as parents support them? They're feeling this. Sometimes they don't communicate what they're feeling with us. They just take their stress on us.
I think as parents, if you are able to, from the start, normalize that there are going to be a lot of negative emotions or some negative emotions, maybe I shouldn't say a lot. Normalize that those are going to come up and that those can be talked about and that the stress can be talked about allows all of those experiences a place to breathe rather than the kid or the couple feeling like I'm not supposed to be feeling that. So I'm going to put it in a locked vault in the back of my psyche.
Okay. Should we move on to finances? That's a big one. And how do you continue that harmonious journey when everyone's anxious over who's paying for what?
Yes. Things get complicated when we talk about money. Money is a very fraught topic. It's a fraught topic in every couple that comes into my office. It's a fraught topic in a lot of families, and it's definitely a difficult topic when it comes to weddings. The answer to your questions are unique to every family. So some families feel very traditional. It's really important for them to stick with the idea that, say, in straight couples, that the bride's family pays for the wedding, the groom's family pays for the rehearsal dinner. But there are so many other options out there. Many couples who are getting married later in life than previous generations pay for the wedding entirely themselves. But I think to get back to the heart of communication, the couple is the connective tissue between the two families. So they really hold the majority of their responsibility for gathering each family's willingness or ability to contribute and to manage the conflicts if they arise between the families, if one of them doesn't feel that the other is pulling their weight.
What I was going to say was, what if you have a daughter who's a procrastinator? You know, you're helping to plan this and she's given you, you know, here's the place we want, take care of booking it, blah, blah, blah. And you're dealing with these finance issues and you say, Sally, we're going to pick up X, Y, and Z. Do you think Scott's family can pick up the band or something like that? And you need to know because you know what? Your child's not understanding that these deadlines are important. And if you don't meet them, you're going to lose the band. How would I work with her on those kinds of issues and get her to step up and get with the program here?
Yeah, I'm going to give you guys a tried and true construct here that often helps with couples and families that I work with to understand each other when it feels like they're really not on the same page. So you, as the parent, can say to your child, when I don't see you recognizing all of the steps that we need to take to actually make this wedding happen, I feel X, Y, and Z. So I feel blank. And so that allows you to focus on your emotional experience rather than starting the cycle of the blame game with your daughter and saying something like, Sally, you have no idea what it actually takes to pull off a wedding and you're not doing anything on the timeline that we need to. You know, you started an argument right at the beginning of trying to have this conversation and then it's off the rails from the beginning.
You know, in terms of the who do you invite, how do you manage that and what do you do?
in terms of the invite, because I loved Ellen's question, just immediate family or 70 people on one side. Mm-hmm. So you have all of those things to deal with. How do you deal with this invite
list? It's really tough. What COVID has done for COVID brides and grooms is strip away some of the expectation because there are so many things that have not been available to them. So when you shrink down a wedding like that, you're really getting more to the core of what the wedding is for rather than all of the pomp and circumstance and pleasing all of these people for an 100 to 200 person wedding. And so I really see in that people being able to focus on why the wedding is happening versus all of the, you know, I don't want to call it hoopla because it is really important, but all of the effort that goes into creating the really big event. To answer your question, Denise, with the invite list, it's really tough because I think you come back to questions of who's wedding is it anyway? Is it the parents? Is it the kids? Who can the parents invite? Who can the kids invite? Whose invites are more important? And I think it's a really, really tough question when you're looking. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, do you find that it's partly due to the person who's paying for the wedding?
Yes, completely. For weddings, the biggest issue that we see with finances for a lot of people is control. So many parents believe that if they're financing the wedding, they should get a say in decisions that the couple is making. My best advice in that realm is to try to set expectations at the beginning. So if you are doling out the cash for the wedding and that means to you, I get to invite whoever I want. I get to be a huge part of the creative vision. I get to have a final say on the venue. Then you're going to want to talk to your kid about those things right at the start so they have an understanding of what that money means from the beginning and they can decide if they're comfortable with that. So you're not further down the road when it gets really stressful and coming up on that conflict at that point. The crux of what you're getting to is can, when we are developing the invite list, whether we envision a huge wedding, whether we envision an intimate wedding, whether we only have the budget for a certain amount of people but wish we could invite double that, it's just adding an extra space in that process to go down the list and ask yourself, how important is it that that person is there? So if you are a mom who has a daughter getting married, and it's really important to you to invite your five best friends, you might want to have a conversation with your daughter to tell her how important that is to you. So she doesn't feel like you're just pumping up the guest list and taking away invites from her, but rather that this means a lot to you and to not be able to share this really important moment in your life with your best friends who you've been with for decades would feel like a real loss to you. So getting down to the meaning of it and really questioning who is important and why are they important can help to clarify that process for everybody.
And do you ever deal with, I think particularly for the parent, they mm-hmm. have to leave out people. Okay, it might be a neighbor mm-hmm. who's known the child since they were little, but the child doesn't feel as connected to that neighbor right. or friend. And they say, you know, why are you going to invite Mrs. So-and-so? You know, I haven't seen her and whatever. But mm-hmm. Mrs. So-and-so is always asking about her and you're close to Mrs. Mm-hmm. So-and-so. And Mrs. So-and-so's invited you to all of her children's weddings. How do you deal with that?
It's a really difficult topic. I go back to trying to have an open, empathetic dialogue between the two of you, which I realize is a lot more difficult to accomplish than me sitting here and saying that. But explaining to your kid how much this person cares about them and seeing if that lands with them, seeing if that means something to them, letting them look at it through a different lens. But ultimately, you may find yourselves on opposite sides of that issue and having to find a way through.
Dress shopping in another 2 weeks.
Yes.
What do I need to do? What should I remember?
So one of the things I would say is that weddings and wedding decisions hold a ton of meaning for people who are getting married. And I'm sure for you too, as the mom. But when you look at something like going dress shopping with your daughter, it seems like such a simple task, but you're really creating an experience that hits on something really foundational in what it means to be a human being, which is that it's in our DNA to want our parents to approve of us. So as parents, you are the very first critical, pivotal, primary caregiver and love in a child's life. And that carries through the lifetime, whether you have a good relationship or you don't. And for each of us, it's rooted deep inside of us that our parents, that we want our parents to approve of our decisions. So when you're going into the process of watching your daughter try on these dresses, not only is there the expectation that this must be the most important dress that she's ever worn in her life, but she's also going to be more sensitive to your feedback more than anyone else, because she ultimately is going to want your approval.
So I should just sit back and smile.
She bite her tongue the whole time is the real question.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's tough. It depends on the type of relationship that you have with your daughter. I think from my side of things, I want you to be able to express yourself. I want you to be able to give your opinion. I think it's just giving it with that sensitivity in mind, that this holds so much weight in her mind and your opinion on it is going to hold a lot of weight.
So thanks for being with us.
It's been beautiful to talk to you both. I love talking about this stuff. So thank you so much.
Okay, so now we're moving on to our second wedding episode, where we interviewed Michelle Martinez, the host of the world's most popular wedding podcast, The Big Wedding Planning Podcast. Let's hear what Michelle has to say. We focused a little bit of this podcast on the groom's family.
Very pleased to welcome Michelle Martinez, who is not only a certified wedding consultant with more than 20 years in the wedding and events industry, but also the creator and host of the world's most popular wedding podcast, The Big Wedding Planning Podcast. I just love her mission. Three sentences: inclusivity is key, perfection is a myth, wedding planning for all. So welcome, Michelle.
Thank you so much for having me, ladies.
We want to focus a little bit more on the groom's family. Sometimes they feel really invisible. What struggles do you feel that the groom's family typically has? How involved are they? How involved should they be? And what are some hot spots?
As a wedding planner, I am working with the entire family and I am talking to the parents so much. And yes, this is a common thing. Oftentimes I'll meet everybody and the parents of the groom, if this is a heterosexual couple, are often a little bit more quiet, reserved, almost as if they feel like, can I speak? Should I speak? What's my place? And it breaks my heart because this is a union of two people, of two families.
But Michelle, I want to say something. I don't mean to interrupt you.
No.
And our latest episode was about daughter-in-laws and mother-in-laws.
I just saw that.
Okay. Yeah. So this mother-in-law, this is her first step into being a mother-in-law. So you realize why she's a little hesitant to speak up too much.
Yeah. I guess, it's so dependent on the dynamics of the family, I feel like, because I've also been, involved. I mean, I find myself as part of the family for the amount of time that I'm working with my clients, right? I'm kind of inserted into the family for a while. There are times when both sets of parents, or maybe even all four if they're divorced, which often happens, mm-hmm. are super friendly. Like they go out together and they hang out together and they're very good friends. And like, wow, that's awesome. But when it's not the case, then you run into this situation.
How can the bride's family welcome them more? What is their role? And I think what we have to think about are families that are apart geographically. Wouldn't you say, Ellen, that they're meeting for the first time?
Well, yeah. I mean, I was going to bring this up later on, but I think I'll just throw this out there anyway. So we have this sort of idea that everybody knows the rules of the wedding. And Denise, you met my daughter's future mother-in-law, mm-hmm. and she is an immigrant. In fact, my daughter's future husband is an immigrant from Bulgaria. He immigrated as a child. They have no idea what an American wedding is like. You know, I was sort of thinking about some of these things, like we assume that the other people have the same value system that we do, and they don't. And it's really typical to sort of marry somebody who is not exactly from the same, whatever, fill in the blank, as your own family is. And that makes it harder because how do you bring someone in who really doesn't share your worldview?
Ellen, such a great point. You know, every wedding is so unique, every situation, every couple. And so we talk about like the groom's parents feeling a bit left out, but we really are generalizing when we say that. You know, we've all seen that. I've experienced it many times. But what a great point. When it's two different cultures, holy smokes. It's like, as an example, I'm born and raised in the US. I'm half Mexican. My husband's from Mexico City. When we got married, my mother-in-law, she doesn't speak English. Everybody flew out here. I remember her having that little bit of timidness within her. I'm like this personality, like, shake it up. Let's go. Oh my God, I'm so excited. And every picture with my family, everybody's smiling. And every picture with his family, everybody's very serious because that's how they take pictures.
I listened to that episode where language was important and how you dealt with, including the Spanish, with the English in the ceremony.
Mm-hmm. Yes. But going back, it does start with the couple. I mean, it's so like dependent on the couple, how they've even introduced their relationship to their families, how involved their families are in their lives. How close is the son with his own mother? How close is the daughter with her mother and her parents? How much interaction has the bride or one of the partners had with their opposite partner's family? But I think it does start with the couple. It's really hard because the other thing is when sometimes the parents, either partner's parents, are afraid to even say anything because it could set the couple off. But I think that in an ideal world, the couple is, you know, very open and welcoming of each other, you know, each partner's parents. And hopefully in an ideal world, they can all gather and get together and invite each other for drinks or dinner, or if they live across this country, go visit and also get on Zoom. I mean, look what this has taught us, you know, the pandemic. We're all online. There's no reason you shouldn't have your family involved. Have once a month wedding planning update. You don't have to ask them what they want, because I know a lot of couples are like, hold on, Michelle, we're planning this wedding ourselves. I don't want my mom telling me we have totally different tastes, but update your parents. Let the parents know what's going on. They just want to be involved. I think if we're going to that traditional groom's mother, don't feel so reserved and don't only talk to your son. See if you can start a conversation with your future daughter-in-law and just know, let her know that, hey, I'm here to support you. I want you to have so much fun. Any way you want me involved, I'm happy to do it. And I don't want to step on your toes, but please know that I'm here and I'm so open to any ideas you have. Just openness and support is important.
The one question someone wrote was, my son just got engaged, and these are people in their 30s, and they were planning an engagement party, I think in the town of the bride. And she said, you know, my son just called me and said, hold off, mom, you're not in charge of this. Again, there is some hesitancy, I think, on the groom's family. Really have to have the guidance from your son, I would imagine. You know, you don't want to start on the wrong foot. Oh my God, your mother is just completely overtaking right. Everything.
Yeah, I think initially, if you don't have that relationship with your future daughter-in-law, to talk to your son and say, how can I start a dialogue with Jenna? I'm just so happy for you guys. Let me know, you know, can we go out for a drink? Can we hop on Zoom? Can you let her know that I'd love to talk with her? No pressure, but I really want to, you know, offer my support, just be there. Or if it's something like I want to contribute financially. But the one mistake I think a lot of parents make, they get excited, of course, like it's their child's wedding, but all of a sudden they have these ideas. I've got to tell Jenna that your great grandmother passed along this brooch and we've all worn it in our family. So I've got to send it to you because she's got to wear it. You know what I mean? When you start doing that, when you start imposing your excited ideas, those might not be what Jenna wants. So you got to be careful. And that's when they start to feel like, oh boy, here we go. Like she's going to start taking over, or she thinks that's what's going to happen. That's not what's going to happen. She didn't even ask me.
It's so hard when you're an excited parent to want to share. You know, I just keep thinking back because you mentioned the grandparent episode. And I think what Michelle is sort of saying here too, is she kept saying in that episode, how can I be helpful? And it's sort of the same thing as what you're saying here is the best thing we can do as parents in this situation is how can I be helpful? What can I do?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's talk about finances first. Because finance is a hot topic. How do they usually figure all that out, Michelle? What happens? You know what the traditional ways are. Or is any of that still happening? What if one family has a lot more money than the other family?
I've seen that a lot, especially out here in, Silicon Valley. Where finances are concerned, right now in this day and age, the average age of a couple that's getting married, whereas it used to be in their early 20s, are now like late 20s, early 30s. And so couples are professionals. They probably live together. They probably have great income or jobs or just starting out. There are still 20-somethings getting married. I hear about it all the time on the podcast. But I think it's dependent on, again, the couple, right? So you know your kids. You know whether or not they don't even own their first home. You know if they've got a great job. You know how old they are. Are they pregnant? Are they not making a lot of money? And if you have money that you've been saving for your child's wedding, then this is the time when you want to say, I'm so excited. Sit them down. Listen, there's something I have to tell you. I have $20,000. I've been saving this just for your wedding. You can use it however you want. The best thing you could say, the most ideal when I get this from my clients is when the parents say, my dad just wrote me a check for $20,000. No strings attached. It's for the wedding. And I'm like, yes. But oftentimes it's like, I've got money for your wedding. So here's what I'd really like to see what happens. I want you to have a 4-course dinner. And in our family, this is the way we do it. Okay. So oftentimes this money, although maybe, you know, it's with the best, the intent comes with expectations. And when it comes with expectations, sometimes it can make things so just terrible, just awful throughout the wedding planning process. Because again, you don't have the same taste as your parents. And a lot of parents, I hear this all the time. In our family, this is the way we do things at weddings. But I think that contributing money to the wedding is really lovely. If you think, and you know in your mind, those listening that are parents, that you can 100% say, I'm going to give that money, even if they don't do the things the way I want them to do it, I'll quote bite my tongue, and it's going to be their wedding and done their way. Wonderful.
Ellen, do you agree with that? I mean, do you feel?
I'm hardly any kind of an expert at this. And I should say too, you know, I think if you have a daughter in the family, you kind of have this idea about how, you know, oh, at some point we're going to have this wedding. I know we haven't gotten into what are the sorts of traditional, if there is such a thing anymore, things that the groom's family contributes to. But what I found was helpful for me is to just say, I'll give you an example. Like Hannah's getting married on the beach. She was like, should we have a walkway from the, it's like in front of the restaurant where the reception is. She said, should we have a walkway there? And I'm like, yes, we should have a walkway. Because who wants to be walking in the sand and your 85-year-old grandmother's going to have to walk in the sand? So then, you know, we get into the whole walkway and my daughter's actually very frugal. So she's like, Mom, it's $800 for the walkway. Oh, and then that doesn't include the labor. It's worth it to me. There are times in this when I just had to say, I'm willing to pay for this because to me, that's worth it.
And did you?
Yes. Yeah.
And I think this is such a great example. Yeah.
And I could, she's like, we don't need it. I'm like, no, we don't need it. But I think you'll be happy that we have it.
That's such a great situation, Ellen, because you weren't coming at it like, okay, I'm going to give you this money and you're going to do things the way I want. Rather, your daughter was like, gosh, I don't want to spend that from my money. And you're like, you know what? I'll pay for it. It wasn't something she was against because aesthetically she didn't like it or she opposed to this idea. She just was like, I'm not going to spend that money for somebody to walk right up, you know.
Can you tell us traditionally what is the groom and bride's roles typically? And I know you don't do a lot of traditional weddings, but the groom's family's responsible and the bride's family responsible. And then I really want to hit, you've been to many weddings, day of wedding, does the groom's family play any role?
So traditionally, you know, if we're going like Emily Post, like look back at tradition, the groom's family will, you know, give some money financially. They might, they usually will contribute to the rehearsal dinner, right? It's rehearsal dinner. It's
but
boring.
But what's happening now? What do you find happening now?
Well, what I'm finding-
Equal amount?
Equal amount if the parents are paying. Yes. Okay. Absolutely. Or whatever they can. You know, I had a client whose her parents are contributing $20,000 and his parents can contribute $10,000, which is a lot of money. You know what I mean? And in the grander scheme of things, Ellen, now that you're doing this, you're like, that ain't anything.
That's exactly sort of where we started with. No, seriously, you just start looking at things. It's like, oh, that's nice. What a cute little idea. Anyway, but sticking to a budget is important.
You know, I'm just seeing more than anything right now, family contributing a certain amount of money that they can, and the couple making up the rest, or the couple paying for everything.
If the parents of the bride and groom share the expenses, respectfully, I guess is the word I want to use, what happens at the wedding with the toasts and such, and the rehearsal dinner with the toasts? Because traditionally, the bride's father stands up, or now mothers are getting more involved, and give a toast and thanks everyone for coming. How's that handled when it's being done together?
If everyone's kind of contributing equally financially?
Respectfully, what they can.
Yeah. So traditionally, yes, the bride's father would give up and give a toast, A, because he was probably contributing, you know, paying for the whole thing. And back in the day, the man made the money and the man gave the daughter away, right? But now, when everybody's contributing, it's case by case basis. Like, I will sit down and consult with my clients and say, okay, who do you want to speak at the wedding? Well, it's like my mom and my dad. And then he says, I want my mom and my dad. And then we want my best friend. And then we want to say something, blah, 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 blah. So typically I'll say, who do you think is hosting this wedding? You know, what does the invitation say? Who's contributing the most financially? Okay. Well, if it's the bride and groom and they're not ready to talk, let's go ahead and hand it over to a parent or both mom and dad together, which I love personally. I love that.
Yeah, I do too.
And then the other parents together, and then move into best friends, other family members, and then let the couple talk later on when we're doing cake cutting, if we do a cake cutting, or at some other time later in the evening.
Okay. How about the rehearsal dinner? Typically, I thought there were more toasts at the rehearsal dinner and less at the wedding.
Some people do that. So, yes.
Some people do that
because some couples are like, I don't want a friggin' open mic night at my wedding. Don't dismiss those toasts too much, because the only other time that somebody's going to talk about you like this is at your funeral.
You're going to miss it. Right. Right.
So rehearsal dinner, I have had clients say, oh, no. We're getting all the toast done at the rehearsal dinner. I do not want anybody talking at the wedding.
Oh, I hate that.
I personally am like, aw. But I've also had it like people talk at the rehearsal dinner and they talk again at the wedding.
Right.
Who cares?
That's fine too.
It's fine. It's a different subject, you know? But if we're going back to tradition and the groom's parents are paying for the rehearsal dinner, the groom's parents will typically kick off those festivities at the rehearsal dinner.
Of an important role in bringing his mother and his future wife together.
So really, the groom should be listening to this episode.
Yes. The thing is, you know, they feel stuck. I mean, mom and girlfriend, wife, you could be stuck in a real hard situation and be like, listen, mom, I love and adore you. She will not like that necklace. I mean, she just get her gift card somewhere if you want to. Or like some parents are so hung up. No, you know, I want to give, you know, my grandmother's bangle bracelet and have her wear it at the wedding. It's just like, those are ulterior motives. Those are a bit selfish. I understand. Oh no, that's wonderful. That's lovely. Do you understand? That's a really important piece of jewelry in my family. But if she's not going to wear it to the wedding, how dare she? Like, that's selfish.
So one question I really want to ask Michelle is, I know it's their wedding and you've got to keep your mouth shut. How about the guest list? Can we invite some of our friends?
Oh,
do we have to really hold back on who we're inviting? What do we have to do with that?
Okay, this is such a big one. Just remember that the guest list directly affects the budget of the wedding. Okay.
Right.
And so when I educate anyone on my clients or the podcast, when we start out in the beginning and we talk about our priorities and our budget, we really have to stick to the parameters of the budget. The venue and our budget dictates how many guests we can invite. And then we need to consider as a couple, are we going to allow our parents to have X amount of guests that they can invite? And so this is always an issue because there's people that you know that you see every day, your coworkers. The answer is yes, you can, but you need to ask your children, hey, can I and how many do I get? Just let me know how many I get and I'll fill it.
Is it ever appropriate to include them in a shower or a party for the child or the bride and groom if they're not invited to the wedding? Or is that like a big no-no?
So traditionally, if you look at Emily Post and all these books, they're going to say no. But more and more, especially with COVID, because our guest numbers have had to decrease so much, more and more people are having these big, quote, engagement parties. We call it a wedding shower. That is kind of directly correlated with the wedding. But if we have a big engagement party and we're very, very upfront in the invitation and the way that we invite these guests in that, hey, we're having this big party to celebrate the fact that we got engagement. This way we can see everybody. Unfortunately, we can't invite everybody to the wedding, but we'd love to see you at the engagement party. And if you feel weird about that, just say like, no gifts, please. Like literally just put no gifts.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Then right. They don't feel like they're getting invited just so that you get, you know, gifts and double gifts for the wedding.
Okay, get us to the day of the wedding. What is the role of the groom's family? In any wedding, traditional, non-traditional, I mean, these people walk in and this is as important to you as it is the bride's family, but what's my role?
Okay, so traditionally, the groom's parents, they may be part of the processional.
Are fathers and mothers walking the bride down the aisle typically?
Yes, I absolutely love it. Often. And you know, Jewish tradition, that's always the case. I think the groom's parents, I think it's lovely when they walk down the aisle together as part of the processional prior to the wedding party coming out. I love that because they should be honored because they are part of the union. I've seen also brides be walked down by both parents, by one parent. I've seen a bride walk down by herself. And it's this huge kind of statement of independence and feminism. And it's absolutely stunning and beautiful. And I love it. Again, it just depends on, you know, the individuals.
One of your first things is inclusivity is key. So what things can the bride's family do to help that groom's family or feel a little bit more involved, a little bit more comfortable, a little bit more part of things?
Well, okay, first, what can the bride's family do, right? That was the first part of the question. Mm-hmm. And I think that is just be friendly, be open, be accepting, communicate, invite them over if you can, if that's geographically possible. Just start to ease into the fact that you all are going to be a family. And hopefully that's going to go really, really well. Be so nice to their family. Be open. Hospitable. That's all you need to do.
Yeah. First of all, Michelle, you are just wonderful. I think you're fun. I see why your podcast has been so successful. I feel like I could talk to you for hours. Thank you so much.
Well, that's a wrap. Wondering how you like the combining of our two episodes. I hope anyone planning a wedding or even thinking of planning a wedding will take into consideration a lot of what these experts had to say. Thank you all once again for listening, and thanks again to Connie Gorant-Fisher, our audio engineer, who worked really hard to take apart the two episodes and create this one episode with all the best stuff. Remember to follow us on social media, send us your input at biteyourtonguepodcast@gmail.com, and if you want to support our efforts, log on to our website at biteyourtonguepodcast.com. Look for the support button in the right-hand corner and give us some love. Happy summer, everyone, and until next time, remember, sometimes you may just have to bite your tongue.